Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Good Evening Kitties podcast, a Tales from the Crypt review. My name is Melissa, your ghostess with the mostest, and today's episode is Season 3, Episode 6, Dead Weight. And when I say weight, I mean W-A-I-T, not how heavy something is. I have with me my friend, my bro from another mofo, my best skank, Adami. Hi, Adami. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me. Speaking of what, I've been waiting a long time to be here, and I hope to bring some of my gravitas.
Ah, okay, cool. Show. Gravitas. Sounds good.
Because it's, you know, weight.
Ah, I get it. Yeah. Ha 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 ha. But, yeah, you don't watch a lot of Tales from the Crypt, so would you say this isn't, like, the only episode you've seen, right? Or
no, I think I've seen episodes when I was younger, back when it was airing regularly.
Okay.
But, like, I don't think I've ever gone back to rewatch any of them.
Okay. We just got done watching the episode, and we have a lot to say about it. So again, it's Season 3, Episode 6, Dead Weight. As always, John Kassir does the voice of the Crypt Keeper, and Danny Elfman does the theme song. This episode is directed by Toby Hooper. All you Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Poltergeist fans know him as being the director. When I saw that, I was like, ooh, Toby Hooper. The screenplay was written by Gilbert Adler. This episode stars Whoopi Goldberg, just coming freshly off the movie Ghost, and also from Sister Act. It also has John Rhys-Davies from Raiders of the Lost Ark, Vanity from Terror Train and The Last Dragon, and James Remar from The Warriors and Tales from the Dark Side, the movie. This episode originally aired July 3rd, 1991. Okay, I'll read the description here on the back of the box here. It says, "Voodoo something to me. An occult priestess has a surprise for a thief who steals a rare black pearl." Which really, to me, the episode didn't seem like it was based on Whoopi Goldberg, but I guess it is, in the way.
She, like, comes out at the beginning, like, look, I'm weird, and I'm voodoo-y, and I'm gone. And then at the end, look back, remember me?
Yeah.
It's all me. And then, like, just even more close, it ended on, like, the interview with her as the actress. You're like, just remember she's in this.
Yeah. And that's just weird, because this episode, the description makes it seem like it's mostly just about her, but really, if anything, it would be more about James Remar and Vanity's.
No, it's definitely more about Dexter's dad than anything
Dexter's
else. Yeah, James Remar is...
Is he Dexter's dad?
He's always going to be Dexter's dad. Okay. I was like, oh, wow, it's Dexter's dad. And I just want to point out, when it said Toby Hooper, I, for some reason, got him confused with Tom Hooper, the director of, like, The King's Speech.
Oh.
And I was like, really? He started off on Tales from the Crypt? That's a... It's an interesting career transition.
No, Toby Hooper, see, he's a horror director. So
no, I know who that is too, but I got confused. And Gimli was in this.
Yes, John Rhys-Davies, yeah.
Who doesn't age, he just stays 100.
So, we'll start out the episode. Like I've said in other episodes for this season, but Season 3, they really put him in a lot of characters. The Crypt Keeper. Right now, he's a travel agent. He's got, like, some lays on and all these posters about where you can go, and they all have dead puns and things like that. Like, lose your heart in San Francisco, and Transylvania sucks, ha ha ha.
I'm surprised they didn't do, like, a lay him to rest.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they didn't do that.
That would have been good.
But, yeah, he's basically just bringing it in, and again, he has... I do like that he's actually using his hands quite a bit in this. I guess they have someone doing the hands in the back. He has, like, a bunch of puppeteers for just to run him. So, like, it's really neat. So, like, they bring in the episode. I want to say this is located in Haiti or, like, Martinique, some sort of island that would have a voodoo priestess. They don't really say. But it starts out, Red Buckley is playing chess under a mosquito net, and he's played by James Remar.
As one does, just plays chess under a mosquito net.
Yes, under a mosquito net, because, hey, that's how you can also tell they're on, like, an island that... You gotta have a mosquito net around you all the time. Now, his name is Red Buckley. He also has very red, gingery-type hair. And that comes into play a lot in this episode. But he's sitting there learning different moves and positions in chess. He's very interested in chess. He's waiting for his, literally, like, partner in crime to get back. When he hears the noise of the guy coming in, he puts the gun up to the mosquito net, which is like, would you shoot through the mosquito net? Like, I guess it would.
I guess if you have to, like, prioritize, it's like your life will more more than getting bit by a mosquito.
That's
and to
true.
Him, it is. But he's also proven not to be the wisest guy.
No. So his partner, I didn't quite catch his name. Oh, Charlie. Here we go. It's Charlie. Thank you, captions. And Charlie showed up. He's been tracking Duval, who is Emile Duval, who we'll see later, played by John Rhys-Davies. And he has been tracking him down and finding out where he lives. He knows he has this black pearl that they've been wanting to steal. A lot of thieves apparently have been wanting to try to get it, and they haven't succeeded.
I just want to point out that when we listed like the 30,000 executive producers on this episode, yeah, one of them was Richard Donner. I didn't catch that last time, but I didn't know Richard Donner was an executive producer on this.
What's he
of
from?
Superman fame. He directed the first Superman film.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he directed like Lethal Weapon and stuff.
There are lots of people involved in a lot of the that's what I really like about the series, because it's just like all these random people who are kind of starting out in their careers.
No, this is like 91 Superman's back in the 70s. This guy's a big name.
Oh, okay.
And so like it's just interesting that like when Whoopi Goldberg was a big name.
Well, yeah, yeah.
And Dexter's dad should have been a big name. You know, he should have gone like, "What's up? I'm Dexter's dad."
Well, he didn't.
Or I will be.
Yes,
it'll
like,
make sense.
There'll
in
be a show
years.
In like 20 years that you guys are gonna like.
Man, that would have really come back for him.
But yeah, so they're talking about what they want to do. They kind of get in a fight based on what they're planning on doing to take this pearl. Charlie throws his jacket on the chessboard, which is a big no-no. According to Red, chess isn't just a game. Mm-hmm. It's you got to use your mind and think. And it's like, well, technically it still is a game, but okay.
Did that ever come back, chess? I can't remember.
Later, Duvall says, like, we can go in and play chess.
Yeah, it felt like it was setting up, like, a
I know.
Big character quirk. And it's like, and no.
I guess because he's just, like... In a way, I guess he's Whoopi's pawn in the game.
I'd like thing. To think this is like a statement on Hollywood, too. It's like, let's introduce like where he thinks this is an important part of his quality, but really we just care about his looks.
Yeah.
Because he's a redhead, and that's all that matters. So this is, I think this episode is actually about Hollywood.
Trying to give him a little more like of a backstory, like, oh, he's smart, he likes to play chess, but really he's at the brightest. And so they get in a fight, and he ends up shooting Charlie.
What's the matter?
You ought to be doing your job instead of fucking with goddamn games.
I got news for you, Charlie. Chess isn't just a game, man. It's a way to improve your mind.
Yeah, well, first you gotta have a mind in order to improve it.
Gotta hand it to you, Charlie. You're the one with the brains, all right. But if you're so fucking smart, how come you're the one that's dead?
So Charlie's dead. I guess he just leaves him there. I don't know.
Yeah, I shrugged.
And then it cuts to this, like, a bar, and there's some rebels in the midst of, like, a revolution.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more people around with guns and soldiers, and you hear a lot of gunshots in the distance, and it's not the super safest place to be right now.
No.
Red finds out where this Emile Duvall is gonna be, who has the pearl, and he's at this kind of, like, a tiki bar kind of thing. And so Red's sitting around waiting for Emile to show up, and he comes in with a pretty lady on his arm, played by Vanity, and her name is Katrine. And they go sit at a table together, and Red decides to make a move and talk to him. He wants to try to get a job at his plantation, you know, so that he can figure out a way to get to this Black Pearl. So he goes over and strikes up a conversation with Duvall, and the whole time, Katrine is just, like, eyeing him up the whole time. She's just like, yeah, she's liking what he has. It's that red hair, I guess. Maybe she wants to knock it off her list. She's like, I've never been with a man with red hair.
I think that's on everybody's list. Man with red hair.
Apparently, Mr. Duvall explains that red hair is really rare on this island. And it also has a lot of meaning. Like, Whoopi's character explains later, it has a lot of meaning of, like, life and, like, good luck and blessings and things. So it's really a good thing. So everyone's just real excited about his hair, which eventually he's like, I don't care, it's my hair.
Can I just point out how easy this guy hired him?
Yeah.
Like, he clearly lied, and he's like, well, yeah, you're fine. I'll hire you to... I don't even know what he hired him for.
To run the plantation.
Run it?
But it's like he has a lot of people there.
There's a revolution going on, and, like, he doesn't do anything. Granted, he's only there for, like, a minute.
Yeah, it just seemed really weird, because, yeah, he has all these other people at the thing, and somehow he's like... Because Mr. Duvall is sick. He has schistosomiasis, which is really gross. And I looked it up, and they don't quite nail it exactly in the episode, but I'll get to that in a little bit. So they're talking, and he basically says he was like he grew up on a farm, Red says. And so Mr. Duvall's like, oh, okay, well, let me see your hands. And so he shows him the hands, and his hands are fine. They're smooth. These aren't farm workers' hands. So then he's like, oh, well, I went into the Navy, and I guess what? Buffed the calluses out of his hands. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure Navy hands are pretty rough.
Yeah, and so he was like, all right, well, I guess he figures, you know, you knew how to run a farm, you can run a plantation. I guess they grow like sugarcane or something. And so he hires him. And so when he's looking at his hands, Mr. Duvall, you can see his hands, and he has all these like nasty, like veiny hands, and he's like scratching them. And that's how you can kind of tell something's wrong with him. And later we find out it's the schistosomiasis, but he's very sick. So I guess that's one another reason he's looking for someone to care for the plantation.
What is, how do you pronounce
it's
the word?
It's schistosomiasis. That one. It's like a waterborne parasite.
Okay.
So if you were to go swimming or drink some water, it's a type of worm that grows in a, like a freshwater snail or something. And then it gets into your body and lays eggs, and it can live in you for years and cause a lot of problems to your liver and things like that.
Oh, okay. Sounds like a healthy way to live.
Yeah, so I mean, it was close. I think normally the rash and the and everything is reaction to the eggs and not the worms. So I don't know how much of all the wormy, veiny skin would be real, but...
I don't know. I can't imagine those 35 producers cared that much about, like, scientific credibility.
But it's still gross, and you're like, oh, ew, yeah, that's a horrible disease. Yeah, so he ends up hiring him. He's like, cool, come back to the plantation tonight. We'll get you in a hut. They show up to the plantation. There's gunfire in the distance. He's like, don't worry, there's rebels. It's fine.
Nice place you have here, Mr. Duval.
Thank you, Monsieur. It's one of the few pleasures that I have left on this earth. Don't be alarmed, Monsieur. It's just the rebels operating in the hills. They're not very well organized on this side of the island. Not yet, anyway.
And this is where we meet Whoopi Goldberg's character. I didn't catch her name, but I'm sure they'll say it here on this episode with the captions.
I have some questions about his plantation, by the way.
Yeah?
What kind of plantation does this guy run in the midst of a complete revolution? Is it like a tobacco plantation? Is it a cotton plantation? Is it... If it's anything that's producing like a big profit, I think he'd go through a little bit more of a restrictive hiring process.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be like, oh, hi, nice to meet you, white man, I'll take you.
Well, I mean, he's a white man as well, kind
exactly, of. But it felt a little bit like, we're not important, we'll take whomever.
Yeah.
Because if it's like a really big plantation, you're going to have a lot of people wanting that
and
job.
And what his, Red's partner Charlie was saying in the beginning is Mr. Duval kind of, he's pretty popular around the island. He has a lot of properties, so people take care of him. So yeah, it is kind of weird that he'd just be like, who's this guy? Cool. Like, even though your hands, you obviously lied about being on a farm, come on to my property and I can obviously tell my lady wants to be with you, but that's fine. He's just really happy-go-lucky. And then this is where Whoopi Goldberg's character comes out. Her name is Pellegre. She helps cleanse the huts, and she just kind of keeps everything spiritually, relaxed.
Uh-huh. I thought she worked for, like, the local butcher.
What?
Because she always has, like, these animal heads and everything.
That's true. She does have a lot of animals later here, so, you know, maybe. But, yeah, so she's doing her thing, and they get introduced, and she's immediately enthralled by the red hair and takes him out to the hut after she studies his red hair.
Is that your real hair color?
Yeah. What is all this shit about my hair?
Our culture believes that the color red symbolizes life, so you should feel very blessed.
I'm working on it.
So they're on their way out to the hut, and that's when Red brings up to Whoopi, like, what's up with Emile's hands, or Mr. Duval's hands, and so then she at first tells him that he's a witch doctor, and he's conjuring up evil spirits, and that's what's in him, but then it was a joke. She was like, JK, you're easy to fool. No, it's just schistosomiasis, you know, and that's what he has. It's a very painful worm parasite, and he's like, oh, gross.
Schistosomiasis. Water worms. They mature in the blood and destroy the liver and spleen. Sometimes they migrate out to the skin and burrow there. I'm told they're very painful.
You know, you figure as, like, a lounge singer that at least was undercover as a nun, she would be very, like, resistant to more religious institutions in her continuing undercover journey.
You know, she had tried Catholicism, so she's like, well, let's try...
See, I like to call this episode, really, Sister Act 1.5.
When did Sister Act come out?
I feel like it came out before and after this. Maybe. I don't know.
Because Ghost was 1990, so she's coming off a Ghost.
Ghost was 1990. Sister Act was 92. Okay, so
She hadn't done Sister Act yet.
Okay, never mind. She hadn't discovered God quite yet.
So after she did Voodoo, she was like, you know what? I need some Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
And then went and tried that out.
Oh, poor Dolores.
And so she takes him to this hut, and as soon as he walks in, you hear, like, some flies, and he turns around, and there's a ram's head that has been severed off of the body and is sitting on a shelf, bleeding and, like, probably really stinky. And she's like, oh, no, it's like, good luck. Like, it helps to protect you in the hut.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately he's like, that's horrifying. Get it out of here. And I'm like, oh, don't deny the power of a ram's head, because it's like... If she is a voodoo priestess and this is what she wants, I'd be like, sure, can we at least just put, like, some Febreze on it or something? Because by him doing that, immediately you're like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Because she immediately is like, you may have your own beliefs and I have mine, but maybe you could respect my beliefs, you know?
But I don't know. I can't think anything else that happened in this episode would have been prevented if he had left a ram's head. Because everything else happened was his own doing, like his choices he made. It's not weird things came and happened to him against his will. It was all like, I'm going to go be a bad person. And then things are going to happen to me because
of that. That's true. Unless maybe by doing that, Whoopi decides to do what she does later. I don't know.
No, because she said, like, because, like, the spirit is in the head.
Yeah, that's true.
So I feel like it wouldn't have made a difference. I feel like it was a false flag.
Yeah, she might have just been messing with him.
Yeah.
She might be like, yeah, this ram's head does nothing. Ha 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 ha. We had all these extra ram's heads.
She likes those LOL JK things.
Yeah, she's like JK all over the place. After he gets situated, he's supposed to come back and talk to Mr. Duval. So he comes into Mr. Duval's house, and it's a little bit later. And you see that the pearl is, for some reason, just in the middle of the living room.
Yeah.
In a glass case on a cute little pedestal, and he's checking it out. But yeah, I always thought it was weird that it's just right there. If it's so priceless, why not have it like in a closet? I guess because you want people to admire it. I don't know. And then that's when Mr. Duval shows up behind him, and he's like, hey, don't get too close. I have an alarm on it. We don't want to set that off. So basically, he's all ready for bed, Mr. Duval. They're not going to play chess.
You think there'd at least be like a, what is it called, standeech?
Oh, the stanchion. Stanchion.
You think
yeah.
You can have some stanchion?
Something like that keep like people keep from getting people that away. Close to it, yeah. Because, yeah, you want to kind of look real close at it.
Because you'd imagine in the middle of a revolution on a plantation, a lot of children are probably in that house running around playing. One of them's going to knock it over.
Or even just random chickens or something.
Or
like
chickens.
Just, yeah. There's a lot of people that come into this plantation, so yeah. Emil's very into he's immediately just relaxed and trustworthy with this guy for some reason. So they're becoming friends, becoming trustworthy, but really it's only been a couple of hours. Like, all this happens in like a day.
Yeah.
So it really just goes down really fast.
I feel like this whole thing, it's been less than 24 hours since he killed that guy.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And so, you know, they kind of get to know each other, all that stuff. He finds out about the Black Pearl and everything. And he heads out onto the porch to leave. And then that's where Katrine's sitting there. And she's changed into like this black number. And she's out there looking all pretty. And apparently Vanity, the chick who plays her, also used to be one of Prince's main, like, dancers
and
back stuff.
Yeah, the Vanity Six.
Yeah, yeah, she was one of them, so, yes.
She's dead now, too.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, she had some
liver failure.
Yeah, there's some really bad disease or something.
Yeah.
So she's out there, and, you know, she's still, I mean, she's really flirty. Mm-hmm. And he's basically like, why are you with a man like that? He's old and sick, and she's like, he takes care of me. And he's like, oh, yeah, money. And she's like, whatever. And so, what I didn't like about this scene, though, is immediately he just kind of grabs her and kisses her. I mean, she has been kind of giving signals.
I mean, his philosophy that he even pointed out later is like, if you see something you want, might as well just take it.
Just go for it.
So he's living up to he's a consistent character. You have to give him credit for
that. That's true. And on this porch here, there is a chess set up with like a red side and a black side. And what it's funny is
is it a red side and a black side?
Yeah, because he has this line here. And he stops mid-kiss, and I think it's because, like, when he kisses her, he's like, all of a sudden he's like, oh, this would be a good line. I'm going to say this. She don't think this is hot. So he stops, and he, like, takes the black piece king, or no, the red king. Yeah, he takes the red king and knocks over the black king, which really, that move, that's not even a move you can make in chess. And then he's like, red king takes black queen, and she's like, oh, yeah, it does. So then it cuts to a real fun scene of the mosquito net shaking in the rhythm of their sexy time. So after they're done, she's like, I gotta get going. Emil's gonna know I'm gone, and she, like, brings him a glass of water. And they kind of start talking about the pearl and making a plan right away. Like, she has known this guy for 5 hours, and she's like, all right, yeah, we'll go get that pearl.
Yeah, we're partners in crime already. Yeah. We have to trust each other completely. Mm-hmm. We have our lives in each other's hands.
You don't even know my last name.
To be fair, I don't even know the actress's last name. It's just Vanity.
Yeah, it's just Vanity.
So I think she's just has, like, a clause in her contract, always a single day moment.
Yes. The next morning, he rolls over in his little red undies, and there's a sheet next to him, and it starts flopping around. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, and it starts turning red, like it's bleeding, and you're like, what? And he pulls it up, and it's this poor headless chicken.
I wonder if that was like an intentional Godfather reference to like waking up with the horse head.
I don't know.
Because you're like, you wake up with the well, this is the opposite. It's like a decapitated chicken.
And it's still moving.
Yeah, but I wonder if there's like a little bit of that in there. Like,
I think it's more just because like a lot of voodoo is like
but like under his blanket when he wakes up.
Yeah,
like,
that's true. She could have just laid it next to him. So basically she put this chicken in his bed that's bleeding everywhere. I think it was done pretty well. I mean, it's real floppy.
Yeah.
And kind of just messed up, and he's freaking out, and he runs in. Whoopi's right there. Or
just hanging out. She's like, I want to see what happens.
Yeah. She's like, okay, I could have just told you this woman was dangerous, but I want to put a chicken in your bed first.
Are you crazy? Bring that woman here. She's dangerous. She will take your soul and throw it away.
You're nuts, lady. You're the one that's dangerous.
I'm trying to protect you.
And he's like, you're crazy. I don't know why you want to protect me. Mm-hmm. He ends up going running back into the house. I guess it might even be the same night, I guess.
I feel like this whole episode takes place over 24 hours.
I think it's still the same night. It's probably like 4 a.m. or something. And he decides to go in. There's like, I think some more gunshots. And you find out that the rebels are winning and they're like taking over the area and they need to probably evacuate. I mean, he's had quite a busy 24 hours. Yeah. It's like they need to evacuate.
And he's largely unfazed. He's like, I'm still good.
I wish I could be that calm around situations like this.
You had red hair.
He's like, oh, okay, cool. Just roll with it. Chicken in my bed? That's cool. Like, he's still freaked, but he's like, he gets over it really quick.
Mm-hmm.
And Emile's up packing some stuff together. They got some more soldiers in there. They're figuring out a convoy. Emile wants Red to take Katrine on the convoy and get out of there. He's going to stay because he's sick and old, and he's like, if they come to get me, I won't go down without a fight. It'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So he was going to wait. They acted like they were leaving. The soldiers were supposed to leave, and as soon as the soldiers left, Katrine was going to come get Red, and they were going to go in and take the Black Pearl when it wasn't being protected because everyone was leaving.
Mm-hmm.
Red is hanging out there in the hut waiting, and I think it's a pretty long time, probably what, now it's like 6 a.m. I don't know, it's still pretty dark. And she comes in there, and he's like, gosh, what took so long? She's like, I don't know, they just now left. And so he's got like a knife and a gun, and she comes out there, and they run back in to go check on the pearl, which...
This whole episode seems like things happen, and like nothing, you don't... Like, all the things they set up aren't necessary.
Yeah.
Is this just going to happen anyway?
So, yeah, they run back in there. They see that the pearl is missing. And so they head into the side den, and right away, Red knew Emile was in there. But
Emile just doesn't seem to care. He's like, yeah, what's up, man? I see you have a gun.
Yeah, like, I think he kind of knew what was coming, in a way. So maybe he didn't trust him as much as he lets on. But he's packing up some money, and right away, Red's got this gun on him, like...
Is the gun really necessary?
I want the pearl.
Don't you think that you're being just a little selfish, eh? Isn't Katrine enough?
Katrine?
Well, I am giving her to you. Now, the pearl may be worth money, but a beautiful woman.
I don't think the lady is yours to give. But the pearl...
I cannot tell you how much you disappoint me. I thought we could have been friends. Now, I swear to you. That even if I wanted to give you the pearl, I cannot, right at the moment, put my hands on it.
Emile goes to leave, and during this, Red is like, where's the pearl? And Emile has this line where he's like, well, I can't really touch it right now, or whatever. Like, the way he's saying it, he can't get to it right now, and you're like, okay. And so Emile turns around to kind of, I guess, pull like a knife or a gun out of his...
Well, because like, it looked like a knife, but at the end he's holding the gun. So I think it's a gun.
Okay. Emile turns around to like pull a gun out of his pocket and it kind of gets stuck for like a second.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah. And in that second, Red shoots him.
To me, it felt like an Ed Wood moment where like something went wrong and they're like, do you want to do a second take? And the guy's like, no, we're fine. Don't worry about it.
They're like, it's fine. I think his gun was meant to come out a little quicker, but it got a little stuck. And so he shoots him. And so Mr. Duval is dead on the floor, and immediately Red starts going through his bags to look for the pearl. This is when Katrine comes in, and she's like, hey.
Also unfazed by the whole thing.
Yeah. She's just like, oh, cool, he dead. I guess she knew they were going to have to kill him.
I guess when you start dating a guy like Gimli, like, you know that this is going to happen one day.
I mean, I would assume that they haven't been intimate in a while with all those
women. I would say if you're you know, getting the hachi-pachi on with a guy that looks like he's covered in scars, like, I don't think anything grosses you out.
Yeah, she's like, it's fine. She's like, you get the pearl, and he's like, I can't find it, and it's just all this money, and there's like little yellow balloons and stuff in there, and he's like, what's with all these balloons? And then he figures out, oh, okay, Emile swallowed the pearl, cocaine drug smuggling style, and... And so then that's when Red's like, well, crap, I'm going to have to go in and get that pearl. He wasn't even like,
oh, crap, he's like, oh, I'm doing this now.
Yeah, he really doesn't hesitate too much. The only thing that he gets to hesitate is because he goes to take the shirt off, and it's just covered in those schistosomiasis worm things, and it's really gross. And that's the only thing that really throws him off. He's like, oh, gross worms. But not the fact that he's got to cut this guy open to get the pearl. You know, at least Katrine's a little grossed out by this part. She's like,
See, I'm going to admit, I completely missed the... how you say that word?
Schistosomiasis.
Schistosomiasis. I totally missed that part. So when he opens them up and you see all the worms, I'm like, oh, this guy's been dead all along. And it's been like a voodoo curse or something. Because I just thought he was like rotting from the inside.
I mean, basically.
So, I mean, I think mine probably works better with the show. Yeah. Because he's a witch doctor. He's been dead for years. Ha ha ha.
He cuts them open, and it's pretty graphic. They cut him open pretty good, and they open him up, and they have, like, his stomach and all this. And it's covered in mealworms, which, me, I don't like, because that's not at all what a schistosomiasis worm looks like. If you were going to do anything, you would do, like, spaghetti and then just pulse it under some blood, you know, or something. Like, it's always used a lot for maggots. They'll use mealworms. I'm like, that's not the same. And
yeah,
so...
like, I'm personally offended by how inaccurate... this particular aspect of this episode was, because I was really playing along for the rest of it.
So he opens it up, and it's real close up of all the worms, and there are a couple, like, regular, like, nightcrawler-y type worms in there, too, but it's mostly mealworms.
I feel like he's missing a few organs. Look at all that empty space.
Yeah, well, and there's, like, holes in it, too.
No, but, like, just inside the stomach, that's a lot of empty space, which we don't have as human beings.
No.
There's also no ribs.
Yeah, it's just stuff floating around
in there.
It's
just one organ.
Yeah, just like a heart and some worms.
That's all it is.
And so he finds the small intestine, or large, well, it might be small. He finds the intestine, and it's kind of gross because he's feeling through it, and he finds where the pearl is, which I'm like, hopefully that's the pearl. What I also think is funny is, scientifically or humanly, he would have had to have swallowed that pearl a while ago for it to have gotten to his colon. I think it takes 9 hours to get there. And we know this time period has been like 5 hours, so I'm like, I don't know if they would be there that time, probably in the stomach. But he cuts out the pearl, or gets the balloon out, cuts out the pearl, and then that's when Katrine grabs a gun, I think it was Emil's gun, I guess, off the floor and points it at him.
Out of his hand.
Yeah, out of his hand, and points it at him, and Red's sitting there all bloody holding the pearl, like,
put down the pearl, please.
I hope I'm not taking this the wrong way.
No, I don't think so.
Katrine, listen to me. Between the cash and the pearl.
Plenty for the both of us, or just more for me.
And so she's getting ready to shoot him, and then that's when you see a voodoo doll being held from the side with a large needle going right into the chest, into the heart, and it's Whoopi's hand.
Mm-hmm.
And she's...
I like how they just throw in the voodoo dolls and never mentioning them before.
They're like, well, you just assume she's voodoo priest. She's like a chicken, and I don't know.
Yeah.
And she cleanses stuff. So she's poking it right through the chest, and then Katrine is like grabbing her chest and bleeding and dies.
Yep.
And Red's like, what? And then that's when Whoopi walks in, and she's got the voodoo doll, and she's good at being creepy.
But she's all like...
Yeah,
well,
I don't
know.
Why? But,
no one else alive there. Who's she
I guess
being quiet for?
Maybe if he would have screamed or, like, tried to shoot her. I don't know.
They've already shot people. There's been multiple gunshots.
Yeah, but she was trying to say, like, because what she said, she was like, I don't want your pearl. I don't care about what you have. If I would have wanted it, I could have taken it any time.
Like, don't say a word. You'll wake the dead girl.
This voodoo has ears. And so she pulls the pin out of the voodoo doll. It's kind of creepy. She, like, licks the blood off of the needle there. And really, this part, and earlier when she had the chicken in the bed, it reminded me of, because she recently came off a ghost, right? So I wanted her to be like, Red, you in danger, girl. What she's pulling there is she's just like, I'm going to help you out. You know, let's get out of here. So he's like, cool. So he grabs the pearl. They head out. And he's like, I owe you. Thank you so much. They're walking through just like this kind of jungly path. And she's like, that's fine. I wanted to get you out of there, you know, in one piece.
Is that, you think it's foreshadowing in one piece?
Yeah, probably. Okay. In one piece. And they show up and they're outside of like this village. And he's like, what's this place? And she's like, oh, that's my village. And he's like, oh, okay. Because, you know, he's just like, whatever gets me out of here. I just stole all this pearl. I'm real excited. She starts talking about his head. And she's like, they say that the head is where the spirit is. And I guess because he has a red head, he must have a very special spirit. And he's like, okay. And then he turns around and she's got this machete and she just lops off his head in one strike. Very sharp machete.
And he's shaking at the knees.
Yeah, it's kind of creepy. Like,
it's like a quick... Ah.
His knees shake and he falls and he drops his bag with the pearl and the money in it. So she immediately comes over and to her, the pearl means nothing. And he's fallen over and he's bleeding kind of gross out of the neck. And it was a nice cut. And so she picks up the pearl and she just tosses it into the jungle. She's like, whatever. I don't need this pearl. And then she picks up his head, and they have the head, like, the face facing the camera. And it looks okay. I mean, it doesn't quite look like him, but it looks fine. And he's got his mouth open, all screamy. And she heads down to her village. Now, what I'm thinking is, I guess because red is such a good luck thing, maybe she's hoping it'll protect her village from this rebel thing, and she's wanted his head ever since she saw him, which was, what, like 7 hours ago? So then she heads down to the village.
Heads down to the village.
Yeah. Heads. Oh, my gosh, there's so many puns in this episode.
Well, you know, that's really not how you get ahead in life.
And it cuts, that's the end of the episode, and it cuts to the Crypt Keeper, and him and Whoopi are having this really fun conversation, and she's having a good time, a lot of puns, and she's correcting his puns. Crypt Keeper, you're so punny. And the bus Crypt Keeper pun is,
"We've got a guest, kiddies. Whoopi, it's a pleasure to meet you. I want you to know that I loved your movie, The Killer Purple."
"That's color purple, Crypt Keeper."
"Oh. Right, well, congratulations on winning that Academy Award."
"Well, thanks, but it's actually called an Academy Award."
"Whatever. Look, it's a pleasure to meet a big star like you."
"Now, you're a pretty big star. I mean, I'd love it if you'd be in my next film."
"Really?"
"Yeah, it's just a bit part."
"I'm flattered."
"But you don't know what bit I want."
"Well, as long as I don't wind up on the cutting room floor."
Okay.
So that's the end of the episode. Adami, what did you think?
I thought it was really cool, and in general, I want to say thank you so much for letting me be on,
welcome.
What is it, Season 3, Episode 6, The Curse of the Black Pearl, and I'm very excited for you to eventually have me back for On Stranger Tides.
Yeah, I had that thought, too, when I saw the Black Pearl. I was like, where's Jack Sparrow at? You gonna come get this pearl? But yeah, so I mean, it's a pretty fun episode. It's gorier than some of the other ones, but...
It really felt like someone wrote a movie, and then they're like, no, 20 minutes, that's all you'll get. I was like, okay, well, I don't need this plot or any of this logic. I'm just going to get these three beats and make a show out of it. Because, like, it felt like they give a lot of thought to certain things, and then just kind of ignored them later on, like chess. That came from somewhere.
Yeah.
And then, like, the ram head. But then it was like, nah, we can't make anything.
I mean,
that.
Yeah, you probably could make it into a movie, like, stretch it out and add some stuff.
I don't know much about Whoopi Goldberg's mid-90s career other than the amazing Sister X and, of course, her time as Guinan on Star Trek The Next Generation. Did she do a movie with a little appearance by the Crypt Keeper? Because that's what she said.
No, she doesn't.
That would have been great if that
I don't think
out.
She does. But yeah, there is a little trivia here. It says here, the title is based on the term dead weight, which is the extra weight on a machine part that lowers its performance when not in use, such as the weight from a rocket engine that has used up all its fuel and is no longer propels the rocket. That doesn't make any sense to me.
No, that is the weirdest way to phrase the term dead weight, which just literally means excess nonsense. Just extra stuff you don't need.
Which is kind of the episode, really, if you think about it.
Yeah, well, I feel like this episode was the... I think, if anything, this episode like got rid of all the dead weight.
I guess.
It felt like...
But sometimes there'd be like, anorexic. This happened because it happened. And then that's pretty much...
Yeah, and I still hold that the whole ram's head thing was pointless because like everything that would have happened anyway.
Yeah, he was still... Yeah, it was... He really didn't wait that long. I guess because of the revolution, he didn't have time to wait. But, I mean, if he would have dragged this out for, like, a week or two, maybe it wouldn't have been so bad. Yeah, so that's the end of the episode. The next episode is Season 3, Episode 7, The Reluctant Vampire. Adami, thank you for being on here today.
Well, thank you for having me.
I'm glad you could be here. Real quick, I want to give a shout-out to the Terror Twins from the Goosebumps Welcome to Deadcast podcast last week. Or so, a little bit of time ago, they gave me a shout out for the Good Evening Kitties podcast, and it was very sweet, and I wanted to say hi to them. It was on the episode My Best Friend is Invisible, so if you like the Goosebumps, go check them out. If you need to contact the Good Evening Kitties podcast, you can email me at goodeveningpod@gmail.com. There's a Facebook page you can join, and there's also a Patreon page if you wanted to monetarily support the podcast. Until next time, thank you for listening. Bye.
I just had quite a scare. I actually thought my heart was beating.